Turn up the radio and sing along. It's time for another great song. This is the Great Song Podcast.
Season's greetings and welcome once again to the Great Song Podcast. I'm Rob Alley.
JP Mosier.
And we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. We're going to tell you what makes them great, why we think they're awesome, and why you should too. JP, how you doing today, man?
I am doing fantastic. So today, we are kicking off a series that I'm psyched about. I don't know really how we're going to release the series. We haven't completely narrowed that down yet. But we're doing a country cooking series.
Yeah.
And it kicks off today with a guitar legend, a country vocal legend, songwriting legend.
Yes, preach.
A bass player legend.
Yes.
More on that story later in the interview. Rob, tell him who we're speaking with today and what song we are covering that he made famous that we are ironically recording on a Friday.
That's right. So I actually got confused. I got tripped up in my words when we were doing our intro because I say we're here to celebrate the greatest songs in modern music history. And I was thinking about how true that is with this song today.
Absolutely.
This song is incredible, and I cannot wait to talk about it. This is The Weeknd.
Ah, you got me, buddy.
Hey, now.
That's why you didn't say the artist, you silly joker.
I really thought it started with the... There it is. Okay. Fair enough. Just kidding, everyone. That's Blinding Lights by The Weeknd.
Play the one that we're
excited
to talk about.
What we're talking about today is The Weeknd by Steve Warner.
Yes.
Different vibe.
Couple of days isn't a very long time.
Ladies and gentlemen, The Weeknd.
Why can't I just walk away? I used to be good at goodbye. But out on the water, under the stars, I let the moonlight play a trick on my heart. Had some fun for the weekend. But I'll be in love for the rest of my life. You took me out to the deep end. And I fell right over. I didn't think twice. I finally got something worth keeping. And if I can't have you tonight, at least I.
Dang it.
How did we get there?
What?
I can't wait to hear Rob talk about it.
What a heck of a song. What a absolute heck of a chorus and two key changes in the chorus. Gotta love that.
Oh, man.
This song is dope on so many levels. Instrumentally, gorgeous, like piano and keys and some tasteful guitar throughout.
Yeah.
This is my kind of piano part on a country song. It's like, you know what I mean? Using my favorite kind of like chord extensions and stuff like that. I just absolutely.
And we didn't even tell you guys, but we are hanging out with Steve Warner at the end.
Yeah, we are.
So please come around and hang around
Steve
with
Steve Actual Warner is
That's
on
right.
the Great Actual Song Podcast.
Man, and he's so much fun, guys.
Yeah.
He is a blast.
He's
Y'all are
great.
Gonna like him a lot.
So that is The Weeknd by Steve Warner, not to be confused with The Weeknd with no E, musical artist from the 2010s and, I mean, present day, whatever. But that is from the 1987 album It's a Crazy World. It went to number one on the Hot Country Songs U.S. Billboard chart and number one on the Canadian Country Tracks chart as well. And it's just great. So the song in itself is pretty straightforward as far as the story of you know, the story within the song, it's basically like we spent a weekend together and I used to be able to let go of these kind of things, but I met my match and now I can't get you out of my head, you know, and I got to have you and whatever. And to you, it was just a fling.
Yeah.
But it did something to me. It broke me on the inside. Uh-huh. And, you know, you had some fun for the weekend, but I'm stuck. Like, I'm done.
I'm stuck with my mullet and pink shirt sitting here on this stool.
Yeah, man. This was 80s country. It was like this. So this could have been easily, and I don't mean this in any way to imply anything about Steve Warner, but what I mean is this could have been a hit also by somebody, several people in like a soft rock genre, right? Yeah. If this came out in, you know, 19, like if Air Supply could have done this in 1981.
Hall and Oates, anybody.
Yeah, like this song is so strong, mm-hmm. and we'll hear about Steve's reaction when he first heard the demo. But this song is so strong that like this could have and probably should have been a hit in multiple genres.
Yeah, and Steve has written a ton of bangers, which we'll talk about. A ton. This is not one that he wrote, but he performed. So we'll give him his due credence on stuff that he's written later. But
this
is a great song that he delivers very well.
Yes, and normally I would have said out front, this was written by Bill LaBounty and Becky Foster, husband and wife songwriting duo. And this was actually their first number one song, but I was too wrapped up in my weekend joke, and I forgot to say that at the beginning. So, but anyway. So, yeah, it just a gorgeous song, very evocative, picturesque. You get a lot of, you know, you took me out to the deep end. And I've, of course, when I was a kid, I was 6 when this song came out. And so I just thought, we went swimming together. That was my basically interpretation of the lyrics. You know, they went swimming. No. And, you know, so still when I think about this song, I think about like...
You're still innocent.
Yeah, I think about like a cabin in the woods, you know, and we went swimming over the weekend and it was great. We had a good time. And I made a new friend.
That's right. We held hands. It was great.
Yeah. It just broke me forever. Okay, the elephant in the room with this song is the music theory in the chorus.
Yeah.
That's just the first thing that I want to talk about when I hear this song. And there was a period of time where just this song fell off my mental radar. You know, it got, you know how your, you have an Android, so I don't guess your phone probably doesn't do this, but my phone has this feature where as you add new stuff, it pushes out old stuff and like offloads apps that you haven't used in a while to make room for the new stuff.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that's what my brain had done with this song.
Okay.
Because I just hadn't heard it in so long. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just one of those. It got just sort of...
Doesn't get a lot of radio play
now.
Now. The stations that I listen to. I mean, if I listen to more older country, maybe.
If you listen to... Like, now you've got country stations that are, like, playing, you know, the music of yore. And you'll still hear it on there.
Yore.
You know? Yeah. And that's that's one of the downsides of those. You have like your Jack FM stations that are like, we play anything. And it's really not true.
It's not anything. They don't.
No, they're like, we play anything within a certain genre parameter. You know what I mean? You're not getting, you might occasionally get like A Devil Went Down to Georgia or something, but you're not getting.
Marshall Tucker Band.
Yeah. Country adjacent stuff. Yeah. But you're not getting like the country hits of that you grew up with, you know. But, anyway, I digress. So let's take a minute and listen to the chorus again, okay? Listen intently with your ears, and then we're going to walk through it.
I let the moonlight play a trick on my heart. You had some fun for the weekend. I'll be in love for the rest of my life. You took me out to the deep end.
All right, we're good here.
I fell right over,
now we're headed for a curveball.
I finally got something worth keeping.
What?
And if I can't have you tonight, at least I had the weekend.
Okay, so it's like climbing the rope in gym class. You go, I don't know exactly what just happened, but I think I liked it, you know? I don't fully understand what's happening to my body right in this moment, but I'm not mad about it.
It was an adventure, but I kind of enjoyed it.
It's just one of those things you're like, I'm going to have to investigate this more. I'm gonna have to do some work on this on my own and see if I can get funny. This sorted out. so that got me. Sorry. We're in the key of A flat here. We start off, I'll telegraph this. We're going to B and then coming back to A flat. So we're going a step and a half up.
Here's the minor third raise that we've talked about.
That's right. And what we're getting is in that first, I finally found something worth keeping. So the chords we're getting there is like an E, F sharp to a B. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so now if you're in A flat, you would actually call that F flat, G flat. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then to a
nothing
B.
Nothing like calling the E the old F flat.
Right. Yeah. I wonder, honestly, if you were writing this down, proper sheet music, if you would write down, surely you would just
put an E.
The key change in on that chord and call it E, F sharp, B. But you could also say F flat, G flat, C flat.
Yeah,
if you wanted to keep it in flats rather than go sharps.
All you redback hymnal folk that are playing along on your organ, you might be like, give me the flats.
Yeah,
just
give me
all the flats.
That's right. Give me all the flats. So what it does is we're in A flat, and that E chord sounds like a flat six chord. So you had some fun on the weekend. If that's your one, I'm pretty close. So then it's going flat six, flat seven, which is not an unheard of move to get back to the one, right? You get that even on a major key.
Yeah.
It does happen sometimes, but what it does is it goes flat six, flat seven, flat three. Technically what it's doing. Yeah. So it's going, but that becomes four, five,
one
of the new key. And this is really neat. The melody becomes minor sounding for a second during the transition. It's really the melody hops into B before the chords actually get there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So he goes, finally found, that becomes, right. Mm-hmm. That's the minor third in A flat. That's the B.
Okay.
So he's singing the 3-2-1 of the new key. 3-2-1, 2-1, 2-5-3, and then a 3-3 down. Right. So, okay, he's already singing in the new key.
Just so you know, that three would be a C if we're in A flat, but it's a B because not a three.
Yes, wait.
We're in A flat because the three, it goes A flat, B flat,
C major.
C major.
Yeah. Right, so you're saying if we're still in A-flat, yes.
A-flat.
But he sings it as a B, it becomes minor because the melody is going to be before the chords tell you what they're finished doing.
Okay.
Okay, so the chords are going E, F-sharp, or F-flat, G-flat, and you don't know what they're doing,
except
what they're up
for
to.
That tells you that it's going to land in B by what he's playing on top or singing on top.
Yes, so it's essentially the melody goes ahead and goes into that, and it makes it sound like an E major 7. His first note, finally found, makes it an E major 7. And so but it doesn't all come together until that
it lands
B major chord. Yeah, that B natural chord. But here's the cool thing about the melody there is that the 5 of the original key, okay?
E flat
becomes the 3 of the new key.
Yeah.
Okay. Becomes a D sharp in the key of B, which is the third.
Yeah.
Okay. We following?
Yep.
So finally found something worth keeping. That note.
Is that?
Okay. With the 5 of A flat.
But the 3 of the new chord.
But it's a 3 of B.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's cool.
All right. Now, when we shift back to A flat, it shifts back with a 2 minor 5 in B, okay, which is a C sharp minor, F sharp, then just up from the F sharp to A flat.
Okay.
Which is kind of what you think is maybe going to happen the first time when it goes flat six, flat seven. Why not go back up to the one? Right? That F sharp is the flat seven of A flat.
That's cool.
So that's the move that it happens. And the cool thing that happens there is the melody does the opposite.
Okay.
The melody third becomes the melody 5.
Which signals that we're going back to
of the new key.
Okay.
So it goes, so that's at least I had, right? That's the third now. At least I had the 5-3-2-1
Okay.
You know what I mean?
That's cool.
So yeah. I mean, it makes sense that it would happen the opposite both times because we're going from one key to a different key, uh-huh, and then back to the original. But it's just an interesting little theory thing that the three becomes the five becomes the three. And then in the melody, they use it again to go back to help establish the new key.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I mean? These common tones can help your ear make sense of these key changes.
Yeah.
That otherwise you might not fully be able to grab onto. But the melody really gives you the key to, yeah, unlock everything.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Okay. That's my thing.
A lot of stuff, but it's good.
Let's meet the band.
Let's meet them.
Hey, let's meet the band. It's time to meet the band. Hey, mama, let's meet the band. Let's all meet the band.
Hey! All right, let's meet the band that played on the weekend. On drums, Owen Hale. He played on the 1997 Skynyrd album, 20, which was 20 years from the crash that killed Ronnie Van Zant and Steve Gaines. He also played with Toby Keith, Patti Loveless, and wait for it, Doug Stone.
Doug Stone.
Go ahead and sing I'll Be Better Off in a Pine Box.
I'd be better off in a pine box.
There it is. Doug Stone, thank you for coming
back
by.
To Georgia.
Doug always overstays his welcome.
It's been a long time.
Doug, it's good to have you back around.
We Great wall
there
of
he
prison.
Is.
Wait
there
for
he
it.
Is.
Doing
Doug.
Time.
There it is. Nailed it, Doug. Owen Hale on drums. On bass.
I think I'd rather Doug. Go to hell and face the devil.
There it is.
Okay.
On bass, Emery Gordy Jr. His first album he ever played on, Cold Springs Harbor for Billy Joel.
Really?
She's Got Away, also on it's his very first album.
Wow.
That he ever played on.
That's
how's that?
Awesome.
Also on Piano Man and Streetlight Serenade, which has The Entertainer if you're looking for some punchy Emery Gordy bass. So, yeah, a lot of stuff with Billy Joel. But that's a great first album to be on,
yeah,
right? On Tambourine, Terry McMillan, the gentleman that you mentioned that wrote, also played synth. Also played synth and did some programming and some background vocal arrangement, Bill LaBounty, and we may talk a little bit more.
I was going to say right there that the story goes that the producer, whose name was Tony Brown, mm-hmm, brought Bill LaBounty in to the session because the demo of this song was so perfect that he wanted Bill LaBounty on it to help make it as much like the demo as possible.
Yeah, that's great. That's awesome. On electric guitar, you want this guy's name on a country album. His name is Billy Joe Walker.
Okay.
I mean, come
yeah.
on. That's a country guitar player's sure. name if I ever heard it.
Yeah.
He's mainly into production, did stuff with Colin Ray, Pam Tillis, Brian White. On acoustic guitar, Richard Bennett was a sideman with Neil Diamond and Mark Knopfler
okay.
of Dire of Straits for the longest time. And I intentionally said for the longest time because he was also Billy Joel's guitar player.
Really?
On Piano Man album.
Wow.
So this is...
Okay, you see what I'm... This goes to support my argument that this could have also been a soft rock number
yeah,
one.
Exactly.
Right? I mean, easily.
Yep. Stuff with Alabama, Garth Brooks. His website is a laundry list of magnificence.
Okay.
He played with everybody. Pause just a second.
That's what also our website, our episodes list is also a laundry list of magnificence.
So that's the band that played on the weekend.
Dude, amazing.
Amazing band.
And we got to talk for a second about Steve Warner's instrumental magnificence.
Absolutely. And it's funny to me that somebody, I think we might have even mentioned this to him on the interview, I can't remember, but somebody that's such a good guitar player doesn't even play guitar on this track.
Yeah.
But he's such a good guitar player. So please, let's dig in for a bit.
Let me play a little bit. Let's just go right in here. He won a Grammy for his involvement with this song. And this is called, I want to say it right, it's called Cluster Pluck. and this is from the Brad Paisley album, Play. And so I'll just play you a little bit. This is also including several other guitarists, but it's just so good. It truly is just like...
buckle up. Let's go.
Yeah, just buckle up. This is Cluster Pluck. Cluster Pluck, excuse
there it
me.
Is.
Hey,
I got to figure out who is what order on this song. Because it's insane. This is James Burton, one of the OG country guitar players. Not even country guitar, just one of the OG lead guitar players. Vince Gill, Albert Lee, John Jorgensen, Brent Mason, Red Volkert, and Steve Warner.
That's amazing.
And Brad Paisley.
If you were like, JP, just play any notes this fast. Any notes. They don't have to be the right ones in this style. I can't even keep up. They're so good, man.
Dude, it's insane. So anyway, needless to say, this won a Grammy
this
for
this track sponsored by the Fender Telecaster. Come on,
yeah, that is Cluster Pluck, one of four songs for which Steve Warner has won a Grammy.
Your significance in pronouncing and your clarity and safety there. Did you ever eat at Fuddruckers?
Yes,
freaking love that restaurant. There needs to be more of those. Some of my favorite hamburgers
great
ever.
Burger. Let's see. The other Grammys to his credit would be another country instrumental performance called Producer's Medley and one called Bob's Breakdowns. And then he won for Best Country Vocal Collaboration with the song Restless. Steve is a member of the Grand Ole Opry. He has 10 number one hits to his credit, The Weeknd being the sixth. You remember when he played the Super Bowl a couple years ago and he did the whole thing where he was like trapped under the stage trying to find his way around?
Right.
I'm sorry. No. You're that was The Weeknd again.
The other weekend. 18 albums, 50 singles. Holy business.
Yeah.
That's a lot of music.
Let's play a few of the other Steve Warner songs that you are probably familiar with. And by the way, if his name is new to you, it is not Warner like Warner Brothers. It is Warrener.
With an I.
Yeah, with an I. Warrener.
It's not Stevie Wonder.
That's right. I believe his last... Oh, no, I don't think this went to number one. I think this actually went to number two and didn't hit number one, but it's one of his most popular ones, and that would be Holes in the Floor of Heaven, which we will talk to him about.
We will, and we will cry.
Cause there's holes in the floor of heaven, and her tears are pouring down. That's how you know she's watching, wishing she could be here now. And sometimes if you're lonely, just remember she can see. There's holes in the floor of heaven, and she's watching over you and me.
All right, everybody grab a tissue. Grab a tissue. I just now figured out how to categorize Steve Warner. Okay?
Okay.
Incredible vocalist, incredible songwriter, incredible guitarist, clean cut blonde hair. Who am I describing? Outside country music.
One more time.
Incredible vocalist.
Okay.
Incredible guitarist. Incredible songwriter.
Clean, in country music?
Gentle vocal.
In country. Would,
outside country Keith, music.
Not Keith Urban.
Clean
okay.
cut, short blonde hair. 80s, 90s. Who
Stephen
am I
Curtis
describing?
Chapman?
Stephen Curtis Chapman.
Yes,
he is country music's Stephen Curtis
That's
Chapman.
Good,
like, and vice versa.
Saddle up your horses. Saddle Steve. Up,
dude, doggone it. Let's see. Well, let's do some more. How about, let's actually stay on that album. How about Linda? Oh, this is a smoker right here. This was also number one. There were three singles off of the It's a Crazy World album, and they all went number one.
Linda, do you wanna dance? Linda,
All right, so that's Linda. He has a ton. He had 10 number one hits. He also is a prolific co-writer. He's written a bunch of great stuff, including this one you may remember by a little gentleman named Garth Brooks.
Long neck bottom, let go my hand. And jukebox don't start playing that song again. There's a girl at home who loves me. You know she won't understand. Long neck bottle, let go my hand.
I mean, no big deal.
Goodness
no big deal.
Gracious, yes.
What else? I don't know. Member of the Grand Ole Opry, I believe I said that. He's won 3 Country Music Awards, an American Music Award. He went on the road with Dottie West, and we'll talk about this, at age 17 after she heard him perform at the Nashville Country Club, which was not in Nashville. It was in Indianapolis. Mm-hmm. And he finished school by correspondence course while being on the road.
That's crazy.
At 17, which is awesome. That's like would have been my dream in high school.
Man,
you
guys are going to love the way he tells stories. It's so good.
Oh, yeah.
He's so fun. Like,
yeah, we're going to get some great stories out of him. His early stuff was produced by Chet Atkins, and we got a great story about that.
Man, that bass player joke is awesome. And, so just wait for that one.
Chet Atkins also helped him to get signed in 1976 to, I believe it was RCA at the time. He's also got cuts with Clint Black, Brian White. He had a Billboard Hot 100 crossover, went to like number 59 with Anita Cochran called What If I Said. He founded his own label in 2003 called Selectone. In 2019, he was inducted to the Musicians Hall of Fame and Museum. And I don't know how I missed this in my first round of research for our interview with him, or I definitely would have asked him about this. But according to Wikipedia.
Okay.
For much of the 1980s, it says Steve Warner developed an interest in stage magic and would often include magic as part of his concerts.
I didn't know that. I didn't read that or see that. Rob loves magic.
I would have geeked out with him over that. And so I don't know if I just missed that.
As much as Rob wanted to be Neil Morse last week, he wants to be the guy playing guitar and doing magic, on stage this week.
Concept record about magic and baseball.
Yeah, exactly. Awesome.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So anyway, the guy's just a legend. It was so cool to get to talk to him. I do have a couple of notes just more on the song and the writers.
Okay.
I want to make sure I mention that. So Billa Bounty and Becky Foster wrote this song. They were husband and wife. They also co-wrote 2 other number one hits for Steve Warner, and that would be Linda that I just played, and I Got Dreams, which we need to play, and you tell the story as we're playing it.
Sure. So Rob was playing this song, and I'm like, oh, I know this song. I love this song. We had a group in our church named The Presence that was fronted by my buddy Dave Passmore. And he wrote this song, but it's not this song. He has a version of this song, and I'll sing the chorus for that song on top of this one. I don't know. But anyway, it's basically a remix of this song, and I did not know those were 2 different songs. I knew both of these songs in my head, and then today just put them together, that they're the same song. He's like, I got Jesus getting me through this life. He said, he's my savior and my guiding light. So it's that kind of concept. That's the same freaking song. Anyway, it's awesome.
JP goes, I love this song. And then it dawns on him, wait, I love this other song that's just like this.
Another song that's the same song. Anyway, it's awesome. It's so great. Good. So good.
Yeah, man. Let's see. Also credited to Bill LaBounty, and some of them presumably with Becky Foster, but I'm not 100% sure on these, singles for Brooks and Dunn, Jimmy Buffett, Lone Star, Eddie Raven, Sawyer Brown, Shenandoah, Tanya Tucker, Ronnie Millsap, and Bobby Caldwell. Ronnie Millsap and Bobby Caldwell both cut the same song by Bill LaBounty, and it is called She Loves My Car.
Okay.
Not to be confused with I'm in Love with My Car by Queen.
Sure. Or she thinks my tractor's sexy.
Yes. Right. Back in Chesney. Yeah, yeah. But if you think of Ronnie Millsap and Bobby Caldwell, Bobby Caldwell is, like smooth jazz, what you won't do for love. Yeah. And Ronnie Millsap is, you know, is it, I mean,
it's country.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, there's a stranger in my house. But, you know, so to think of them both doing the same song, but it's cool. I mean, it's a great song. You listen to it. It's really interesting. It's actually, it actually surprises me more that Ronnie Millsap did it.
Okay.
Because to hear the song, well, I'll just play it.
Yeah, play a little bit of it. I'm going to go for a ride in your car. I thought it was an ad, but that's the actual beginning
the actual,
of the song.
Yeah.
Nah, that's country,
this
buddy.
This is pretty... Do you think so?
That guitar?
It's heavy.
No.
For country? In the 80s?
No, come on, buddy.
And then listen to the chorus. Hold on. There's synthesizers going
on. Okay, that right there.
This is closer to The Cars than Ronnie Millsap.
That right there is... There's so much space between the lines, yeah. Son. Right there. I'm pushing faster, but now, that's a country song.
This part sounds crazy. We'll wait till the chorus hits, though.
I don't know. I'm confused.
That's...
It's a weird melody.
That's awesome. Like, that is an awesome melody, an awesome chord structure. Getting into a major one to a, I think, a flat three. And yeah. But yeah, she loves my car. It's, that's fantastic. But I don't know that that's country music. That's 80s music.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's country.
Okay.
But good on him. Like, I love that. Get you a song that will work
both,
for
yeah.
Ronnie Millsap and Bobby Caldwell. Yeah. I absolutely love that. It took 3 months for The Weeknd to climb to the top of the charts. That's a slow burn for a single.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know the timeline of the single releases, but you could easily have had another single released after
this. Competing with yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 3 months, that's a long time. So I don't know if something precipitated that, if it was kind of sizzling under, or if it was kind of a steady climb, or if it was kind of just sitting and then something happened and it just leapt, you know, up. But people finally went, whoa. The album itself, It's a Crazy World, went to number 30 on the U.S. Billboard Top Country Albums chart. It was Steve's fifth studio album. And like I said, it had three singles and all went to number one. Small Town Girl, Linda, and The Weeknd was actually the third single. So I guess there wasn't a fourth single after this.
Small Town Girl, he wrote with John Hall of Orleans.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool. Okay. Let's, why don't we stump the genius and then maybe we'll go talk to Steve.
Let's stump the genius.
Stump the genius, stump the genius, stump the genius. It's time to stump the genius.
Jump up and take your part. I take your part. All right. I was going to do Weeknd facts, and that was kind of boring because the only good one I could come up with is Sweden. In Sweden, Saturday is the only day that young kids can eat candy in Sweden.
Really?
Only on Saturday. And so that got kind of depressing.
Just the absolute lack of freedom. I'm disgusted.
IKEA is all they have. Just kidding. Here we go. So on we go. There, IKEA's right from Sweden.
Yeah, yeah.
That sounds right.
Yeah.
Okay. Here we go. Stump the genius. I'm going to do Steve's birthday is December the 25th.
Okay.
Same as Jesus.
That's right.
So these musicians all have a December 25th birthday.
Okay.
So I'm going to play a clip. Let's set a timer.
Okay.
Let's do 35 seconds.
All right.
And I'm going to play five songs, and we'll see if you can get these musicians.
Okay, 35 seconds.
These were all born on December the 25th.
Okay.
Here we
go. So that actually doesn't help me to know anything about
them.
I just have to straight up identify the musicians.
I think you're going to do okay.
All right. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, go. Jimmy Buffett.
Jimmy Buffett.
Stevie Wonder? No, I was thinking, Annie Lennox.
Annie Lennox. Oh, man, I don't know how long it takes this one to come in. Let me jump it. Oh, my gosh. Get us some vocals.
Help. Dido?
Dido.
Okay. Oh, a lot of miles.
A lot of miles.
7 seconds.
This one's going to be the toughie. Let me try to get
the last one that gets me.
It's a
shame.
It's a downright
no.
That's Barbara Mantrell. But man,
Barbara.
Good job, Rob. All right. Margaritaville, Jimmy Buffett, Annie Lennox, Dido, a lot of miles. All burned on Born on December 25th.
I don't know if I would have pulled Barbara Mantrell at all.
That's why I put her at the bottom.
Even if Annie Lennox tripped me up a little bit because I was thinking of when it first hit, that piano thing reminded me of what's the song where Stevie Wonder starts speaking and he's like, and then he's like, I gotta speak a very fluent Spanish. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, absolutely.
He's like, I know that Iraq, Iran, I mean, Eurasia.
Yeah.
What song is that?
Oh, man, I can't
Don't remember. You Worry About a Thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Is that what it is?
I forgot about that.
The beginning of it reminded me of that.
Yeah.
All right. I hope you guys have enjoyed our little country cooking episode with Steve Warner. We've gotten in with a few legendary country artists of late, so we'll be sprinkling them throughout the season in some order and on into next season. We've just gotten some great connections with some country legends lately, so you may hear a little bit more, not more than usual, just...
Some of our favorite interviews are these guys.
They're so good.
Man, if you guys are going to be like, these interviews are polished. These guys have done this before.
Yeah.
And they feel so comfortable.
Yes.
Every one of these, you're like, holy
cow. It's like they've all graduated from interview college.
Exactly.
Like, you know. They're going to be great. Steve's awesome, man, and just a real part of my, like, young musical life. He was all over. I remember being sick of this song as a kid.
See, and I wasn't even hip on this song. Like, this is more a Rob find than I was. Mm. And Rob's like, oh, The Weeknd, we got to do it. And I was like, I need a refresher.
Yeah.
But then I was like, okay, yeah.
I heard The Weeknd so much as a kid that I think my brain blocked it out. And then it came back to me in my 40s. You know what I mean? Yeah. It took 2 decades off and then came back. And of course, all his, he was all over the radio and stuff, right? In my country music prime.
Yeah.
So big deal for me, and I know for you to get to talk to this legendary Grand Ole Opry member. And we're going to talk to him about all kinds of stuff. I mean, he was part of Loretta Lynn's homegoing service, whatever you want to call it, her memorial service.
Celebration at the Grand Ole Opry. Of life.
Yeah. the guy's an absolute legend. So we're going to talk to him about all kinds of stuff, and you're really going to enjoy it. We'll be back to tuck you in on the other side. But first, I need you to just kind of stop what you're doing, if you would. Pull over if you're on the road, or like if you're on the subway, have them stop the car. Just have them just stop the train, just for safety's sake, so you don't drop your phone while you're doing this. I need you to go to Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And follow us there at Great Song Pod. Make sure you're subscribed to the podcast wherever you're listening to it. And make sure you turn to your left and turn to your right. touch three people and tell them, go to greatsongpodcast.com. Okay? And if you want to go the extra mile and help support the show, help us to be able to do what we do and become a producer, you can do that by going to patreon.com/greatsongpod. That's patreon.com/greatsongpod. And if you decide to support the show anyway, you will have A, our eternal gratitude, and B, every way that we can possibly find to say thank you and show our appreciation. So for everyone who does support the show on Patreon, we want to say thanks. For everyone who's listening and under the sound of my voice currently, I just want to say, man, I love you with all my heart. Thank you so much for listening to the show, being part of our journey here on the Great Song Podcast through 11 seasons, coming up on 6 years.
Having a blast.
Just amazing. So we're going to go talk to Steve Warner.
I can't believe we're going to go talk to Steve Warner.
We'll be back on the other side to tuck you in.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, as promised, we are here with country music icon,
legend,
Steve Warner. Steve, thank you so much for joining us today on the Great Song Podcast.
Well, my pleasure, guys. And wait a minute, say that again. Did you say icon?
Oh,
I like that.
You better believe it. Icon.
Thank you, guys. I'm glad to be on with you.
Man, it's a real treat. This is like, you know, every now and then JP handles most of our like booking and stuff like that. And so every now and then he says, hey, I just landed so and so, and I go, what? And so he's like, I got Steve Warner. And I'm like, are you serious?
That's cool, man. So,
yeah, man, really great to have you today.
Yeah, same here, man. I'm glad to do it.
Well, let me start here. Let's go all the way back to the 1970s. You broke into the industry as what I see as a kind of transitional time for country music, the 1970s. The sound of country music broadened a lot during that period. You had groups like, you know, I think about groups like Exile that were really kind of pushing the limit of like is this country music? Is this pop music?
Oh yeah.
You know, so from somebody who was coming up in the thick of that, tell us about the country music scene of the mid to late 70s.
Well, man, I came to Nashville in 73, late 73. I'm one of those rare guys, I guess, probably rare, a musician that actually came here with a job. I met Dottie West, the great Dottie West. I met her when I was in high school, my senior year, and she offered me a job, and I took it, and I had to wait till my semester break of my senior year. When she met me, the guy, she said, can you, she heard me playing, and she said, can you join the band? She goes, well, I love what you're doing. We need a bass player. Can you join the band? And I go, Dottie, I'm a senior in high school. and she goes, oh, you are? And I go, I graduated. My grades were okay, and I graduated. I did graduate, youngsters out there listening. I did graduate. But I moved here having a job, and when I came here, and I actually lived with Dottie for a while. I lived with her and her fiance at the time, Byron, and their kids, you know, Dottie's children, you know, and I was just like another one of the kids. I hit it off with all of them and lived there for a while until she booted me out and said, you know, you might want to find your own place someday here, you know, and which I did. And
how'd that conversation go with your parents?
I was really getting comfortable on that couch in the basement near the pool table. I mean, you know, it was pretty comfortable and great cook, and she was a great cook. But I worked with Dottie West for 3 years. We did the Opry. She was an Opry star. First time I did the Opry, we did it several times before they moved. In 74, they moved out where they are now to the new place. They were building Opryland and all that. But I played the original Grand Ole Opry at the Ryman. You know, I played a few times before they moved it. So I'm glad I got to do that, you know, see what the Opry was at the Ryman, you know, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's very cool. So,
but Nashville, your question, Nashville was, oh my gosh, you can't even imagine what it looked like in 1974, 5, 6, you know, through there. It was small Nashville, little small, charming town, you know. I wouldn't even call it a city, really. Well, it was, but I looked at it more like a town, you know, a big town. It was really cool. The music community was pretty tight knit. You know, everybody knew everybody. It was pretty small, you know. And I, as soon as I was with Dottie, I worked for her for 3 years, and I started networking quickly. I just came here wanting to be a player, you know, and I knew I wanted someday to make records, you know, and be an artist. I never in my life uttered the words, I want to be a star. You know, I mean, that's to me, you know, sometimes you talk to young people now, their aspirations are to be famous. You know, I don't know what I want to do. I just want to be famous. But I just wanted to play music somewhere. I just wanted to go play with some players and, you know, sit in with somebody, make a record, maybe, you know, record. And I did that, you know, so.
Well, Rob asked you to go back to the 70s, so I'm going to take you back even further than playing Here Comes My Baby with Dottie West. What is it like to share a birthday with Jesus? You're born on Christmas, December of 20. Do you have to share gifts? I mean, not with Jesus, but like you have to separate, like this is birthday gift, this is Christmas gift. My wife's birthday is December the 23rd, and she's like, you have to tell me, like, I need my birthday gift.
She totally understands. We have the same birthday because she knows exactly what I'm going through. Larry Gatlin told me once, he said, hey, you're born on the same day as Jesus. He goes, you're never going to top that one, are you? And I go, no, never. You know, so.
Rob made a good point. He figured that's probably why your middle name is Noel. Did that have anything to do with it?
I think so, you know. And, you know, it's funny, y'all. It was when I was in school. If the conversation ever came up, hey, what's your middle name? And I'd go, oh, no, they're going to come around to me, you know. And I was so worried that they were, Noel, oh, my God, you know. Might as well be Santa Claus middle name, you know, but I was so worried. But I even went so far as I would say it's Noel, you know.
Really?
Yeah, it's Noel. Yeah. But, you know, here's a phrase as a kid growing up. Here's a phrase that I got really accustomed to. I bet your wife, too. hey, happy birthday and Merry
and
Christmas.
Merry Christmas, yeah, yeah.
And then they hand you one present and you go, man, you know. but that was my childhood. But I guarantee you one thing, when I got married, my wife Karen, she lays a law down. There's no such thing as putting Christmas paper on a birthday present. And there's always going to be a birthday, just a birthday, usually a cake, or, well, there always is a cake, but a little bit of a celebration. Not, I mean, you can't compare it to Christmas, but we always have it in the evening, like after all the whole Christmas hubbub is pretty much winded down, and like about 9 o'clock or so, then we go, I got some more presents. Oh, cool. You know? And then she makes a cake usually, or gets a cake. And so she goes out the way. My point though is that she will not miss crisscrossing at all, because she knows I had that my whole life, you know. And I don't, it's okay, because my mom and dad, I think that's how you do it when you got a house full of kids and you don't have a ton of money. That's how it works, you know. Right. So I get that, you know.
Sure. Well, while we're reminiscing, so if you could go back to 1982 and tell 1982 Steve Warner, as he kicks off his album with your memory, what advice would you give him? Please don't tell him to change the red tie that matches the red PV-T60 perfectly. There's like so many knobs on that guitar. Me and Rob are both PV guys. I played a Wolfgang. Anyway, PV plastic everywhere. What advice do you give 1982 Steve Warner?
Well, good Lord, we don't have enough time on your show to do to all the things I've said. What a
cliff notes, pick one.
What a knucklehead I was. I was walking around, oh my God, I'm really all that, you know. And I should have listened to my dad, because he always said, man, don't think you're hot, you know, because you'll walk down the street and you'll trip over somebody that can kick your butt in anything, you know. So, and that's true. I told my kids that always. But I don't know, I'd go back. You know what, the biggest thing, being serious for a moment, what I would probably do is if I could, and this was common in the day when I signed with RCA, Chet Atkins signed me to RCA, and I signed a singles deal back then. That was a common thing, you know, let's see how you do, we'll put out some singles, let's sign you to a singles deal. And so they like to never put that album out. You know, I had a top 10, a top 5, and a number 1 before that record even came out, and I begged them to put it out. And then, oh, there's an oil crisis. We're having trouble pressing vinyl. And I go, well, so they're not having trouble pressing the Crystal Hill record, you know, so whatever. But if I could go back, I really would. I probably would I'd hook up with a strong management company or management. Back then, a lot of artists didn't have management. It was real common, you know, for a guy like me starting out to not have management. That changed for that next generation. You know, there was hardly anybody, artists that didn't, they weren't represented. You know, when you don't have management, the labels can kind of, you know, as great as they are, they can, there's nobody there to represent you. You know, they can do what they want pretty much. And you're a young guy going like, oh, that's great, let's do it. You know, and you need somebody looking over, making some of those wise decisions and hard calls, you know. And I didn't, it was just me, a single guy, knucklehead me, just living, playing a T60 PV, and, you know, you know, it was a, you need to, if you're starting out on a label like that, even in the world of back then, it was a smaller music, country music was in its infancy, really, as far as, you know, the music row we know now. It was like nothing like that. You know, way that sounds like, it feels like 100 years ago. It was such a different world. But I would come in blazing with a, like Waylon. I always loved Waylon because I was on RCA. Waylon was there too, and he always had a really strong management. Of course, he was Waylon, but I always thought, man, that's what you need, is you got New York lawyer management, man. They're coming in hot, man. So that's what you need.
You definitely let your style continue on. And even the video for The Weeknd, you're rocking that awesome mullet and pink shirt and everything. So got the video vixen country style in there with you. You mentioned Chet Atkins, and I know Rob's got something on Chet that he wanted to throw at you.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you just a couple things about Chet. I know, obviously, Chet has been a big influence in your life, both musically and professionally. And so I wondered if you would tell us a little bit about that. And please do include your story about getting fired by Chet Atkins. That's not a question I would normally ask somebody, but I love that story so much.
Absolutely. I met Chet through a guy. Well, let me back up just a little bit. I'll do a condensed version of this because I don't want to bore you guys to death. But think of this, 1976. I go out. I'm working for a guy named Bob Luman. He Luman, and you need to look him up, everybody, because he was a rockabilly star in the 50s, and then he went on to do country music. He had huge country hits. Let's Think About Living, and Neither One of Us Wants to Be the First to Say Goodbye. He did those and was huge. I played with him for about a year after Dottie West, and he was a dear friend. And he was going to make a new album, and he called me. I was touring with him, and he said, "Man, I've heard some of your songs. I never had any songs cut at this point, and I just was writing every day." And he said, "I'm going to cut some of your songs, and I'm going to be cutting at the House of Cash out in Hendersonville." And he lived in Hendersonville, by the way. He lived on Caudill Drive. And one of his neighbors was Johnny Cash, and the other neighbor was Roy Orbison. And he said, "One of my neighbor's going to produce an album on me." And I went, "Uh-oh, this is going to get good." And he goes, "And I want to do some of your songs, and I want you to play on it, bass." Mm-hmm. And I go, done deal, man. So I go out the House of Cash in Hendersonville. Don't even have a bass with me. I go to a music store in Hendersonville and borrow a bass. And I go to the House of Cash and walk in, and there's Johnny Cash in the control room. And Bob motions me. I'm setting up my gear. And he goes, "Do that song for John." And I sang the first song he wanted to do. And Johnny Cash goes, "I love it. Let's cut it." And I go, "Oh, my God, I just got my first cut." And then Johnny Cash did this four times. He cut four of my songs on this album.
That's amazing.
And the album is called Alive and Well, Bob Luman. And I played on it, and the guitar player that came in on the 2 o'clock session was Waylon Jennings. He played acoustic at 2 o'clock on the session. Cool. I'm getting to the Chet Atkins thing is why this story probably feels like it's rambling, but the session guitar player on the session was a guy named Paul Yandell. And he was Chet's right-hand guy, had been for years. And they were super close, and he toured with Chet. Well, he came over to me during one of the breaks, and he said, "Man, I like your songs. If you'll get a tape together of some songs," that he said, "I think Chet would love to hear you." And so I ran after the session and cut some stuff and took it to him, and he took it to Chet, and Chet heard it and called me. And I was up in Kentucky at my mom and dad's, and my brother used to call me. My older brother, Kenny, used to call all the time, and he would always mess with me. He was one of those guys, and he would go, "Yeah, this is Merle Haggard, Steve around." And I would get on and go, "Shut up, Kenny," you know. And so Chet calls me at my mom and dad's, and he goes, "Yeah, this is Chet Atkins. Is Steve Warner there?" And I go, and I would answer the phone, and I go, "Kenny, shut the hell up, man," you know. And it was Chet. It was really Chet. And so Chet said, "Man, I want you to come down. I want to meet you. Paul gave me that tape, and I want to meet you." And so I went down. That's what led to me recording with Chet. And we started making records. He took me in Studio B, and we started cutting some things. That kind of as a test, you know. He had me play guitar for him, and I'm hands are shaking. I'm going like, "I'm freaking playing for Chet Atkins,"
right,
you know.
No deal.
And he recorded me, put me on tape, and then it led to me getting a, you know, he signed me eventually to that contract. But Bob Luman passed away, 42 years old. I had about $10 in my pocket, you know. Down here with no, you know, really couldn't afford tomorrow's meal probably. And Chet knew that, I think. And he, while we were trying to make some records, he said, "Why don't you come on the road? I need a bass player. Come and tour with me." And so I started touring with Chet, playing bass. And Paul was in that band too. So it was great, man, a great band. We toured Europe and it was just unbelievable. And one story, and I'll get to the firing in a minute, one story, too, was one time in Alaska, I'm playing, and he introduces the piano player, and I'm playing my bass, bump, 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 and I see Chet coming my way, and Chet bends over and whispers in my ear and says, and I'm thinking, he never comes over to me during the show here, and Chet Atkins bends over and says, "Has anyone ever told you you're the world's greatest bass player?"
Oh man!
And I say, and I go, "No." And he goes, "Have you ever wondered why?" And then he walks back, and nobody on the planet heard it but me.
That's great.
Is that awesome?
That's fantastic. Great. I love that.
Now, in the meantime, I went in his office one day. After that, not long, I toured with him for a while. And we had some records that did okay, some singles. We never hit a home run. So he called me one day and he goes, "You should go with another producer." He goes, "I'm starting to slow down and I'm not really doing it much." And he said, "You can still tour with me, you know, we'll still tour, but you really should go." And I went with Tom Collins. He produced some records on me. Well, we put out a record called Your Memory, and it was top 10. It went to 7, I think. And it was a hit all over radio. And Chet called me and said, "Hey, come in, I need to talk to you." And so I go in, and we just got back from a tour. And I go, "Yeah, what do you need, Chet?" And he goes, "Well, I see you had a hit. You got a top 10 hit record." And I go, "Yes, sir. It's cool, isn't it?" And he goes, "Yeah, that's great." He goes, "That's great, man. I'm happy for you." And I go, "Well, thanks." And he goes, "You're fired." And I go, "What?" And he goes, "You're fired." And I go, "What do you mean?" And he goes, "You need to get yourself out there and get your own band and get it going, man. You got a top 10 hit record. You need to get out of here and get going." And I go, "Okay." He fired me, and then we were best friends up until I was with him a week before he died. I mean, we were super close, and every time I saw him, if it was in a crowd of people, he would always, when he saw me, even to the end, he would say, "Steve, I thought I fired you. What are you doing here?"
That's great.
He was the best, man. He was my pal, and I miss him every day.
That's good. That's great. Well, there's so many, like, we have a list. I'm like, I don't know which thing to talk about with, like, because I was like, "Well, let's go Long Neck Bottle with Garth." Now I'm like, "No, let's go Nothing But the Taillights with Clint Black." Now I'm like, "Wait a minute, let's go Where the Blacktop Ends with Keith Urban." So I'm like, wait, I got to pick one because we're on a time limit. So I'm going to go a little deeper cut. Small Town Girl. Actually, let's go one more. If I can make Living Out of Loving You, it's going to hit heartstrings because Rob loves a good parenthesis in a song title.
I do. Love it.
That's his thing.
I do, too.
Really?
Something about that. I like it. Isn't that weird?
It adds some, like,
Rob,
subtext.
Rob, you're weird like me, man.
Yeah, man. Absolutely.
That's a Rob thing. And I am a huge Dave Loggins fan. I mean, please come to Boston.
I love Dave Loggins. I just had a conversation about him a few days ago.
Yeah.
We're talking about Dave Loggins, and what a writer. I wrote a bunch with him, and we've got some songs we wrote together. We got a killer song that I never finished it, never did anything with it, but he came to my house like a couple times and we wrote this song, and it's called "He Takes the Long Way Home." And it's about a guy that don't really want to go home because there's not much there for him. She don't love him anymore. So he always, coming home from work, he always takes the real long way home. Oh my God, it touches you. And we wrote that. And the only problem is, I think the reason I never did it, because it's about 7 minutes long. It just kept going and going, but it's all good, you know.
Right.
And he's a tremendous writer, man.
Yeah, I was just
artist. I love Please Come to Austin. I think artist, not only a writer, but an artist, you know, and I don't think he really got his due, man, to be quite honest.
Same.
I'm loving talking to you because you're, after all this time, you still sound very excited about great songs.
Oh, yeah.
And I just love
it's
that.
About songs, man. I always tell people they don't bring up the writers or give them credit, and I always say, man, y'all, come on. All you artists, go try to have a hit without a song. I mean, the song is the important thing, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've been, like you heard me a minute ago, my first cuts I had was 76, you know, with those four with Bob Lumen, produced by Johnny Cash. About a week later, I got a Conway Twitty cut on I'm Already Taken, a song that I had a hit with in 2000.
Man.
And then I started having hits, you know, I mean, excuse me, I started having cuts by other people. And I remember one of those cuts that I did with Bob Lumen. I remember I pulled into, it was at Tusculum over in Antioch in South Nashville, and I pulled into the parking lot, summer, real hot day summer, and a real good-looking girl pulls in right beside me with her windows down, and there's a Bob Lumen, my song I wrote is playing on her radio, and you're talking about a lesson in restraint, because I was wanting to go, hey, I wrote that song, you know. And it was one of my songs that Bob cut. And it was all, I just was, I was quiet. I didn't say a word. So, and she was hot.
That's fantastic. Well, speaking of hot women, I made a connection with one of your songs that I knew as a kid, but it just didn't, I didn't understand it all until I'm doing research for this interview and listening to it again. Let's talk for a second about Linda, because.
Oh, yeah.
So I didn't understand.
Well, that song was written by Pat McLaughlin and Bill the Bounty,
yeah. Who
I would later go on to write a lot with Bill the Bounty. After that song, I started writing with him a lot. We had a lot of hits of mine that we wrote. He wrote The Weeknd also, and his wife, Becky Foster. And then I wrote I Got Dreams with him, and we wrote a lot together. But Linda, he and Pat McLaughlin wrote that. But I always thought they probably wrote it about Linda Carter.
That's what we were talking about. Wonder Woman.
Last verse talks about, you know, I'll be your Spider-Man. You can be my Wonder Woman, and I'll be your Spider-Man.
Yeah, so that never clicked
with me. Which is really cool, but I love that track. Tony Brown produced that, and, man, that was a rocking track for that time frame, you know, the tracks. I remember us saying, like, oh, my God, are we going too far? These drums are, like, huge. And now you hear it, and you go, oh, my God, I can't believe we thought that, you know.
But, right, yeah.
But I love that record. Tony Brown is just fantastic producer, and lucky to have been with him.
Yeah. You know, another song of yours that I didn't realize was yours until I'm researching, and then I go, of course that's Steve's voice, would be the theme song for Who's the Boss.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that as a kid, but you sang the theme song for Who's the Boss. That's awesome.
I did, man. And you know, that show had been out for a couple of years. I may be off a little on my time frame, but it'd been out for a couple of years, and I got a call, speaking of Tony Brown, I got a call from Tony Brown, my producer at MCA. He called and he says, where are you? I was touring, and I said, I'm in Arizona. And he goes, oh, where are you headed, west or east? And I go, I'm going out to California from here. And making my way out there, I'll be in LA for a few days and blah, 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 and working our way back home. And he said, well, I just got a call from Larry Carlton. Larry Carlton, the great jazz player, you know, the incredible guitar player and producer, Larry Carlton. And he said he's looking for someone to do a TV theme song. And I go, oh, he said, would you be up for it? And I go, heck yeah. I said, I'll be in L.A. in a couple of days. And so he gave me his number, and I called Larry. And Larry said, oh, you're going to be here? And I go, yeah. And he goes, well, let me set up this session. And he goes, we'll cut some stuff, and then I'll take it. He goes, it's for a show called Who's the Boss? And I go, oh, okay. He goes, there's a guy that's done the first couple of years, but they're wanting to change it. They're changing up everything on the show, and they want... And he goes, I'll cut some tracks on you, and I'll pitch it to the TV people. He goes, we won't tell them you're a country music star. We'll just tell them, I won't tell them anything. And he goes, because if they hear the word country, they'll immediately not use it. Mm. And that's what we did. And he called me. I went into his studio. I think he was his studio, 335. They called it out there, and he lived in North Hollywood. And I cut at his studio, and he called me a few days later and goes, I went into the meeting, played it for him, because I didn't mention crap about you're a country artist. He said, I just said, I got this guy, and they loved it. And he says, well, you got it. He said, you're the new Who's the Boss guy. So, and then it came out, and I did the theme song for like 6 years, and then they changed it back to somebody else the last year. The very last year, I think they went back to somebody else, but it was on. I think ABC, I believe it is, but for years, you know, and now syndication, I see it all the time. And I always know which ones are me, you know, I can even if the volume's down, I go, oh, that's me. That's my line. You know? So, yeah, that was really cool. You know, and I do it in my shows sometimes, and I tell people, this is my biggest hit. You probably don't even know it. Yeah. And the biggest hit, you don't know that it's me. You know,
that's great. Well, we want to be respectful of your time. Do you care if we ask you a few more questions? We told Fran we'd try to keep it.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm good. Yeah, I'm having fun. You know?
Okay, cool. We just don't want to cut. We want to be respectful of the 30 minutes, but we got some stuff.
No, I appreciate that. Yeah, well, I got probably another 10 minutes or so before I got to run, but that's
great.
Cool.
Sounds good.
Well, let's since we're going to be focusing on the song The Weeknd, let's go ahead and get into that a little bit. And I'm going to kind of tie in two questions.
Yeah.
First, how did you get introduced to that song and end up cutting it? And then on a larger scale, You know, you're obviously, you're one of the most respected writers in Nashville, and obviously you can,
thank you.
Write anything that you could need, you know, you could write and put together an album. So when you do decide to record something that is, that somebody else has written, is it more likely that you find yourself looking for a particular kind of song, or is it that you hear something else and go, man, I need to cut that?
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, those are both awesome questions, and I'm glad you brought it up, the second one, because I'll do the first one first. The way I found The Weeknd, that song was written by Bill Abowdy and Becky Foster. That's Bill's wife. She's a really good singer and a tremendous songwriter, too, in her own right. And I had a piano player with me at the time working for me named Randy Hart. He later went on to be a director of publishing for BMG, RCA, you know, BMG, and he's a big publisher around town, and now he's a staff guy at the Grand Ole Opry. He plays out there for years. Still a really good friend, but he worked with me for years. Unbelievable piano player. He worked with Roger Miller. He's Roger Miller's band director for years. And but we're on the road, and I've been listening to songs, Tony Brown. Whenever we got ready to record back in the day, I would take a whole week and just spend a week listening to songs all day, taking appointments, going around to publishing houses, and I would just always go with what I thought was the best songs. I was trying to write, too. I was writing myself, but I always just went with the best songs I could find. But anyway, so the week ended. I think we were leaving on a Thursday night going on tour, and I got on the bus, and we got out of town about an hour down the road, and Randy Hart was a good friend of Bill Abowdy's. They were very good friends, still are. And Randy, my ears are burning from listening to so many songs all week. And Randy says, Steve, I got a song I want to play you. And I go, oh, no, man, no, no, no. I don't want to hear any songs. I'm burnt. And he goes, no, you're going to want to hear this. And so he said, it's a brand new song Bill Abowdy wrote and Becky. And he puts a cassette tape in our deck on the bus, rolling down the road. And the intro starts, and we copied, stayed fairly true to, because Bill Abowdy is a great keyboard guy, so that intro was very similar to how we kept it a little bit. And so as soon as I heard it, and he goes, a couple of days isn't a very long time, and I heard the intro piano, and then I just popped the tape, and I go, oh, my God. And as soon as it got to, we had some fun for the weekend, but I'll be in love for the rest of my life. And as soon as I heard that, I just stopped the tape, and I said, I told our driver, Beck, he was my driver for years, and this was way before cell phones, and I just stopped the tape and said, Beck, find me a payphone. I said, pull over and find me a payphone. I'm calling Tony Brown, and we're putting this song on hold in a ASAP, you know, and so that's what we did. And as soon as I got home, we cut it. And I knew the minute I heard it that it was just magic, you know, something about it. And it fit me perfect. And I'll say this about that record. Reggie Young played some brilliant parts on that. And John Jarvis played all that beautiful piano. Emery Gordy Jr. played bass and Eddie Bayers. No, wait a minute. That was Owen Hale played drums on that. Eddie Bayers played on like 90% of everything I did. But Owen Hale, the great Owen Hale on that. That record was the first thing I ever did. It was the first record I ever had that actually, when it started becoming a hit, it not only was a hit in country, it started crossing over into, like, they called it AC radio back then, adult contemporary. It really got a lot of play. I mean, you could hear it alongside James Taylor. It got played. First record I had that got played on not country radio. And that was unbelievable. And then Small Town Girl came later, and it got the same AC attention, too. I started getting played on other formats. You know, that was huge for me because I'd never done that before. You know, you could be sandwiched in between Cat Stevens and James Taylor and Michael Jackson and whatever. You know, you ride along with them, the Eagles. Yeah. You know, Jackson Brown or whatever. So that was pretty big in those days. So, that record was special and still is. It's still the biggest thing probably I do. When I play shows, people start singing that. You know, I can stop and they'll just take over. That's the one that I have to do. You know, The Weeknd is always probably one of the biggest I've ever done. And And you were talking about songs, I think, Rob, a minute ago. You were talking about, here's my theory on it, and Chet Atkins taught me this. I learned a lot of lessons from Chet, and this is one lesson that I learned way a long time ago, and I stuck with it even after I became what I thought was, maybe other people didn't think, but I thought I was a pretty good songwriter. And even when I thought that, I would still go by what Mr. Chet told me, and it's true. He said, always go with your gut on a song. He said, I don't care. He says, don't play the game of who published it or who wrote it. He said, if it's the great song, cut it, because the great song always wins. And don't play the games on the publishing and stuff, because that's a real trap you can get into. And I knew what he meant later on, you know. But and so I've actually argued with record labels because of another song. I argued once with MCA about a record that I wrote. They wanted to put out my song, and I was arguing for a song that I didn't even write because I really, truly thought it was a better song. And now everybody goes, why are you crazy? If I'm talking about for a single, you know.
Right.
And I go, well, I just think that's a better, I think it'll be a bigger record. I think it's going to be huge. And I couldn't argue because the one that they put out on me that I did write went number one. So I was like, well, I guess I don't know, but I was fighting for not my song, you know. So I always just went with what I thought was the best song. And I may have a lot of songs that I was pitching as well, but I was hoping to get cuts, you know, and I did. But, like, for example, Life's Highway, that song had been passed on by two other artists, big artists, had heard that and passed. And Tony Brown played it for me, and I just flipped. And I said, oh, my God, I love this. We got to do it. Roger Murray and Richard Lee. And wrote that, and then Tony said, "Well, two other artists were passed on it." And I go, "I don't care what they think. I'm doing it." I always think that a song finds its way home because it'll make its way to the right artist, and I really believe it. And I mean, I got songs that I passed on. That's silly, you know. I passed on "You Needed Me," you know, by Ann Murray.
Yeah.
Hey, well,
and but I just thought that was a girl song, and I still do, and that's why I passed. I passed on "No Stranger to the Rain." You know, I passed on that Keith Whitley song.
Really? Okay.
And but you know, they passed on "Life's Highway," so you know somebody did. So whatever.
But they found it.
That's
home,
all
right.
Comes. It all works out, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, this has been so much fun. We want to be respectful of your time. We'll tell our listeners, go out there and pick up any of the 18 albums that he's got out there, or pop in his version of Tennessee Christmas. I don't care who's – thank you for taking
– Oh, you guys, I love it that you know that stuff. It's so great.
Dude, that's awesome. Or if you want to cry, put in "Holes in the Floor of Heaven" and just sob with everybody else. Or, heck, he mentioned Bob Lumen. Go ahead and pick up "Lonely Women Make Good Lovers" by Bob Lumen.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
I learned that from the movie.
Told me once, hey, do that song, "Only Women Make Good Mothers."
Only women. That's good.
only women make good mothers.
That's hilarious. That's funny.
Well, hey, I've really enjoyed it, y'all. Thanks so much, man. What a fun time, and hope we can do it again down the line.
Can we ask you one quick 15-second question we ask everybody?
Absolutely. You got it.
You're on tour, either playing with a group, doing solo stuff, and you go into a gas station. What is your gas station snack food of choice?
Oh, my gosh. You know what? It'd probably be a Mr. Good Bar.
Mr. Good Bar.
I'd probably grab a Mr. Good Bar. If they didn't have a donut that was covered in chocolate, I'm going to go with chocolate. So, yeah, that probably... My number backup would probably be either a Kit Kat or a donut that's chocolate covered. But man, a Mr. Good Bar is pretty daggum hard to beat. Chocolate and peanuts, and I'll be quiet.
No, that's great. That's great. You've been awesome. Thank
all
you
respectable
so much,
choices.
Steve.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, keep me posted when it's going to be out and how I can get to it and all that. So
you'll do it.
Good deal.
Thanks,
thank
Steve.
You so
this
much.
It's been a
Steve.
Blast.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
See ya.
Cheers.
Bye bye.
This is the Great Song Podcast.
And that was country music legend Steve Warner.
There we go.
On the Great Song Podcast.
Goodness gracious.
What is this?
What is life?
That we get to talk to these people. I still don't understand. Every time, it's like a dream that I keep expecting to wake up to. I don't know how we've gotten here.
It's amazing.
I really don't. From recording our first interview, huddled around one microphone... with a speakerphone.
That's right.
Because we just were woefully unprepared for the technology end of how to do
and
it.
And hanging up thinking we had just done the coolest thing in the history of the world.
High-fiving each other.
Hugging.
Dancing around the room.
That's right. Blowing shofars. just having the greatest time.
Yeah. But man, it's been such a ride and such a thrill every time to get to talk to one of these amazing artists. Except, no, exhale.
No, stop.
I'm just kidding. Cut that out. All right. But so we're so grateful and we're thankful you guys are along with us on the ride. And man, let's do it again. You want to do this again next week?
Woohoo!
Absolutely. Yahoo! All right. We'll see you guys next week with another amazing song. Until then, I'm Rob.
I'm JP.
Go listen to some music.